Okay, I think we can start. So, Erev Tov, everybody. I just want to welcome everybody. Nice to see you. Pleasure to welcome back Rabbi Aaron Greenberg, who, as you may have gathered, we sort of see each other at least three times a week, because Rabbi Greenberg teaches a little bit less than I do, but he teaches at Chat together. He's been teaching for many years, so we see each other, of course, at Minyan in the teacher's room more, but that's only a very small part of his job. What Rabbi Greenberg's been doing for many years, he runs OUJLIC here in Canada. It's a little bit different than in the States. The Vroom kids in Canada tend to live at home, not on campus like in the States. So it's a whole different thing. So he's at least three universities, at least, and they've set up around. So Rabbi Greenberg's been running it together with his wife for many years, five children. And it's a pleasure to welcome back to Torah Motion. Vakasha, Rabbi Greenberg.
You
got one of the best parshiyot. You didn't pick Tazrim Mitzora last week. You waited till Kedoshim. Ah, gotcha.
Listen, I had a choice of two, right? Achrimot or Kedoshim. It was like a good option. You can do.
Yeah.
You cover a lot of ground.
Yeah.
I think Ray Kelman read his invitation. Ray Kelman and I grew up together on Evanston. He's a couple years older than me.
But I didn't mention that. Okay, very good. Yeah, of course. Grew up on the same street. Yes.
Same street.
I'm sorry I didn't mention that.
That's okay.
You're a little kid, a little like in diapers, you know.
I was a little kid.
Yeah.
It's always always pleasure to be back. I have to say, Ray Kelman, before many of you joined, they were having a discussion at the Kelman dinner table. I'm sure they have very deep discussions at the Kelman dinner table. And one of the discussions was how many people would be joining tonight. For those of you, I don't know if I should tell anybody. Maybe it's not a good thing. Maybe it is a good thing. There is another event happening in Toronto tonight that many people might be focused on. So, to me, I don't know, 29 people, even logging in 29 people for 8:30 at night on a Thursday night with other things happening in Toronto is quite remarkable. It just shows you the incredible depth and meaning that really Torah Motion, really people feel really much connected. So many online things have ended. This seems to be continuing going strong. So really cool about everybody. It's wonderful to see. I encourage everyone doing their cameras on. You know, you don't need to have like a formal hairdo or, you know, whatever, wear like a suit and tie. But if I appreciate it, if not, that's okay. But it's always a nice thing to see people's faces and not boxes. Those of you that have your camera on, I really do appreciate it. Okay. In my 2-minute prelude, it brought in a couple more people. So that's good to know. What I want to do this evening is I'm actually going to send out in the chat a link, very simple link. It's to Safaria. I'm noticing now there are 32 people that have joined. So if there's more people that join, I will post it again. Because if you join later, I don't believe you can see previous chats. So that link is a very simple, basic translation of a couple of the psukim, a couple of the verses that I want to highlight. And in particular, what I would like to highlight is a topic that I'm sure many people are quite familiar with, but I think it begs analysis and understanding to really lead to a much greater appreciation. And here we go. So we're all familiar, many of us, I'm sure, are quite familiar with the idea of the pasuk, the verse that reads, love your fellow as yourself. In Hebrew, v'avta v'recha kamocha, I'm reading from Leviticus, from Vayikra, chapter 19, verse 18, yudchet at the end there. I'm sure maybe you're familiar with that idea. It's a, you know, love your neighbor as the self. It's very popular. It's often quoted. It's often cited. But what I want to do tonight is to understand the verse or that phrase in its context. And I think perhaps if we see it in its context, we might have a greater appreciation for it. Because, you know, if you really think about it, and, you know, we're in the middle of Sfirat HaOmer. We begin from Pesach, after the first day of Passover, until Shavuot. We're heading, it's a 7-week period. And during those 7 weeks, we count the Omer. And it is understood by some as a very tragic time. Why? Even though originally it was a very happy time. Think about it. We're going to the pilgrimage festivals. We're going to Jerusalem to celebrate Pesach and Shavuot. You'd think it was a very happy time. And in fact, the Ramban, the medieval commentator, the Ramban actually says that these weeks were like Chol HaMoed. They were like one festive in the beginning, one festival at the end, and a number of weeks in between them with, you know, days of festivity with bookends of holidays of Passover and Shavuot. But what had happened over time, for various reasons, both based on the Talmud, but even afterwards, hundreds of years later, because of various Jewish calamities that befell the Jewish people during this time, they took on more of a mourning period. And one of the reasons that's highlighted is because the students of Rabbi Akiva perished during this time. And again, there were other tragedies, the Crusades and the massacres that took place, and it was a difficult time in Jewish history, and therefore it was a custom not to get married during this period of time. But one of the reasons that the rabbis tell us is because Rabbi Akiva's students perished. And what's fascinating is that there's a well-known statement, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Akiva says, V'aftal recha kamocha ze klal gadol b'Torah. This is a well-known principle in the Torah. And again, we sing it, it's a song, but what does it really mean? What does it really mean? And how can we understand it in the context of the psukim? Maybe we'll see something quite fascinating. And I'll tell you why this principle, Rabbi Akiva says it's a great principle. What does it mean? And I think we're going to, when we see and zoom out into these verses, into these psukim, and see in its context, I'm hopefully we're going to see an insight. I'm going to need a little bit of participation if you can. It would be greatly appreciated. Take a look with me. The verse that I quoted, V'avdrecha kamocha, is, I see more people have joined. I'm setting up the link again. Is 19:18. But I want to go back a verse. I want to go back a pasuk. To 1917. Let's read the opening line together. I'm going to open it. I'm going to read it. There's a translation there, but I'm going to translate it as well. Here we go. Because I think to underappreciate the end of 18, we need to begin with 17. Here we go. Lo tishna et achicha bilvavecha. In English, it says, you shall not hate your kinfolk in your heart. Right? Do not hate your brothers, your kinfolk in your heart. Then the verse continues, Ocheach tochiach et amitecha. You should reprove, you should rebuke your kin, v'lo tisa alav chet, but incur no guilt on their account. Friends, I don't know about you, but that verse, that pasuk is very strange. Like, it seems to come out of like left field, right? Like, don't hate your friend in your heart. Like, you know, reprove him. Give him a bit of mussar, you know what I mean? Like, you know, tell him off. And then also, like, incur no guilt on their account. It almost seems peculiar, odd, disjointed. And the next verse, Lotikam velotitor b'nei amecha, don't take vengeance and do not bear a grudge on your b'nei amecha against the members of your people. Oh, and by the way, Vafta l'recha kamocha niyashem. Love your fellow Israelite as yourself. I am God. I don't know about you. When I read these verses, these psukim, and I see them in their context, I'm like, what is going on here? I scratch my head, whatever little hair I've left. Right? I scratch my head. I'm like, what's happening here? Like, what is the Torah? What is the Bible trying to tell me? Look at 17, right? Don't hate your folk in your heart. Reprove your kin. Don't incur any guilt? Are these just like a hodgepodge of various phrases and words and ideas that are just thrown on a pasuk, thrown into a verse? Okay, and they're printed together. And what does one have to do with each other? Right? What's the connection? What's the, how is this supposed to be read? How is this supposed to be understood? Now, I think if, you know, there's like games that we play in life. And sometimes, you know, when you want to put Humpty Dumpty back together again, you have to appreciate the various pieces of Humpty Dumpty. So let's maybe appreciate perhaps some of the pieces, some of the parts of these psukim, of these verses. And if we could appreciate each one of these parts, maybe we could see how they fit together and see something quite insightful. Here we go. I want to argue, and again, I just want to, full disclosure, this is not my idea. I've had very few creative thoughts on my own. I want to argue, and I think it makes sense to say, that there's a number of different ideas here, And if we can figure out how they're connected, you know, it's like you have, what is it? This bone is connected to that bone and that, right? So you have a bunch of bones, but if they're not connected in a certain way, they're pretty meaningless. They're not quite relevant. And so what we want to do here is take these bones, take the pieces of Humpty Dumpty and put it back together again and construct what exactly is the Torah trying to tell us. And I think if we can do that, it will give us a tremendous insight into really what Vavtorecha Kamocha might mean. So here we go. If we have bones, what connects bones? Ligaments. I think ligaments connect bones. Okay, so we got to figure out the ligaments to these bones. You know, like when it connects senses like but or and, right? These conjunction words, right? What are the conjunction words? What are the ligaments? And, but, because, in order to make sense of all, of everything that we have here today. So let's begin. Idea number one. Lo tisna et achicha b'levavecha. I'm reading again from 1917. The Torah tells us, do not hate your kinfolk. Do not hate your friend in your heart. If I had to ask you a question, and I had to ask you, does the Torah say we're allowed to hate somebody? Be very offended. The Torah hates somebody. Please, the Torah would never say you're allowed to hate somebody. It's the Torah. Come on. How could you hate somebody? The truth is, though, I'm not so sure. Let's read those words very carefully. The Torah maybe is saying you can hate somebody. Maybe it's saying that. Because it says, Lo tisnem dechicha bilvavecha. Well, maybe that implies something. Where are you allowed to hate somebody? Says you can't hate somebody bilvavecha, in your heart. Don't hate in your heart. But where might you be allowed to hate somebody? For now, it would be understood as not your heart, whatever that means. Because the Torah is very clear. If the Torah wanted to say don't hate, it would say lo tisna techicha, period, end. The fact that it says bilvavecha, in your heart, has to be telling us something specific. Has to be telling us something intentional. Because if the Torah wants to say don't hate, the Torah is very good at saying don't do things. Don't murder, don't kidnap, don't do X, don't do Y. Lo tisna. But it qualifies it. Why does it qualify it? And what is its connection to the next part? And how, of course, what would be the conjunction? What would be the ligament that's going to connect these two ideas? So I'm going to share with you what the Ramban, the medieval commentator, who lived in Spain. Gilead was forced to leave and flee and eventually made it to the land of Israel. He says something amazing. He makes this connection. And he says, listen, in life, things go wrong. It's human nature. People get into fights. People get into arguments. It happens. And he says that, you know what? Sometimes it's okay to hate somebody. But you know what's not okay? It's not okay to smile when you feel hatred. It's not okay to fake it. Says the Ramban, don't keep hatred in your heart. Don't bury it deep inside. Don't pretend that everything's fine. You know how these people, you know they don't like you, or you know they don't like somebody, and they're able to fake it, or can they see that Canadians, I'm a Canadian, by the way, full disclosure, right? That Canadians are very good at that, right? They can say please, and they can say thank you, but you never, you know, what do they feel inside? Israelis are very good at saying it like it is, right? They're much less politically correct than Canadians, right? They say it like it is. And sometimes, us Canadians, we don't always say it like it is. You know, it's hard to really know what the person is really thinking. Says the Ramban, Lo tisna et achicha bilvavech. Don't hate somebody deep inside. And now, maybe, what would be the next connecting component? Well, look at the next phrase. Hocheach tochiach et amitecha. Velo tisa alav chait, says the pasuk. The Torah tells us, don't hate in your heart. Now, it's very interesting. I'm looking at the translation over here. And so far, there's a period. And in English, the text that we have, it says, I'm going to post it because I see more people have joined. The Torah tells us, ocheach tochiach et amitecha. But what connects that first phrase to that second phrase? The English here is a period. You should not hate your kinfolk in your heart, period. Almost like the next sentence, reprove your kin, but incur no guilt on their account. Says the Ramban, what's the connection between the two? It's very simple. Don't hate that person in your heart. Go over to them and talk to them. Hocheach tochiach et amitecha. Talk to them. They did something wrong. They hurt you. Speak to them about it. Put it out in the open. Have a dialogue. Don't fake it. Don't pretend everything's okay. Don't hold the grudge. What do they say about holding a grudge? Is that, you know, someone does something to you and they bother you and it eats you up at night and you can't sleep because you're holding it inside, or you're letting them affect you. They're not even paying rent and they've occupied your headspace, right? They're not even paying rent. At least charge the rent. At least make some money out of it, right? So sometimes someone does something to you and you hold it inside, that's debilitating. That's dangerous. The Ramban says, the Torah tells us, don't hold it in. Go over and speak to the person. Hocheach tochiach et amitech. Sometimes hatred likes to be secretive. Sometimes it likes to be buried inside. No, says the Ramban, be upfront. Find a way to approach that person. What about that third phrase in this verse? The lo tisa alav chet. Incur no guilt, but incur no guilt on their account. What does that mean? What do you mean, incur no guilt on their account? Rashi, another famous medieval commentator, a little bit before the Ramban, he says, listen, be very careful what you say. Be very careful what you say. Don't do it in a way. When you actually speak to your friend, when Johnny, who hurt you, when you go over and speak to Johnny, be very careful how you do it. Don't do it in a way that causes you to transgress. You might think that they've sinned against you. You might think they've done something terrible against you. Don't cause more sin. Don't cause more evil. Don't cause more hate by the way you tell it to them. Meaning, if Johnny hurt you, don't approach Johnny in public. Don't do it in a way that's hurtful. Do it in a way that's constructive. Or else, lo tisa alav chet. Don't incur guilt on their account. Don't incur a chet. Don't incur a sin on their account. The way you approach that person needs to be done with sensitivity, with attention. Otherwise, you are also bear responsibility. So again, what are we trying to do? We're trying to see how these three phrases in verse 17 connect to each other with their intent to bridge it to 18, that we can appreciate the phrase, v'avtarecha kamocha, love your fellow like yourself, in its context. So that first verse, Pasuk 17, Yud Zayin, tells us and connects these three ideas. How are they connected? They're not disjointed, but rather they are connected. The ligaments that connect them are as follows. Lo tisa deicha buvavecha, don't hate your friend. Johnny does something wrong to you, don't hold it inside. Don't let it eat you up inside. Confront them. Speak to them. Approach them. When you do that, lo tisa alav chet. Do it in a proper way. Do it in a kind way. Don't do it in public. That's how those three parts, those three phrases, are in fact connected to each other. Don't hate someone in your heart. Speak it to them. Approach them. But do it in a way that's proper. That's how we connect those three ideas in Pasuk Yud Zayin. Any questions so far? Supposed to be privately, raise your hand. No? Okay, fine. That means everyone understands everything or nothing, or we still live in the world of Zoom where people... That's just fine. Okay, next. 18. So now we got to figure out, what in the world, how does 17 connect to 18? This is amazing. Look, tikum velo titor. I get excited when Torah is exciting. Torah is always exciting. Sometimes it takes more energy to make it more exciting. When I think you realize you see something amazing, you feel the excitement is palpable. Lo tikom v'lo titor et b'nei amecha, v'avtah recha kamocha ni Hashem. So what's the connection? First of all, what's the connection with this verse and the previous verse? That's number one. And number two, how do you, I'll answer that question in a second. It's a great question. Hold on. Lo tikom v'lo titor et b'nei amecha. do not take vengeance or bear a grudge. I will explain what that means. The rabbis were very, they had a very clear understanding what it meant. And how does it connect to previous pasuk? What is the connection between vengeance and bearing a grudge? And of course, loving your fellow. So we'll deal with that in a moment. I see someone asked the question, how did your brew without making it worse? So be careful. We use the word rebuke. You know, we think of it like, you know, the scolding and the waving of the figure, of the finger, right? That's not how it was understood. Their rebuke, I think what the Torah tries to say us, what to tell us, is approach the person. That's how the Ramban understands it. It's actually fascinating that this phrase from a Jewish law perspective, most of the time it's better not to rebuke, not to even say anything, because unless you're going to be successful, sometimes it's better not to say anything. But here, the way we are understanding it, I also think there's certain value in approaching a person. What's better? Someone does something wrong to you and it eats you up inside for 30 years? That's not any better. Sometimes approaching the person, approaching and going over to them and saying, I want you to know something. Johnny, what you did to me really hurt me. And sometimes Johnny, I would like to think, 95% of the time will say, oh my goodness, I had no idea. I didn't realize. I didn't understand. I didn't mean it that way. Or I'm so sorry. I thought it was a joke. Sometimes being open about things and confronting people is far healthier than leaving them inside. And, you know, and confronting the person that hurts you, not your spouse or not your child or not even your therapist. But going over to that person that hurt you, I bet you 95% of the time there can be reconciliation and clarification, and it's a much healthier system. So when we talk about rebuke, that's this ocher tochiach, definitely how it was understood by the Ramban, perhaps not always how it was understood by our sages, but that's maybe for another time. But great question. Let's continue. Lotikam velotitor. So what does it mean, vengeance and bearing a grudge? It seems to be very, very strange words. So here we go. It's understood, Rashi understands, is that they're kind of like almost opposites. And there's a classic way which Rashi and the commentators say this. And I'll explain. What does it mean taking revenge? Taking revenge is as follows. Do me a favor. Can I go over to Johnny? We're going to use Johnny. Poor Johnny. We're picking on Johnny tonight. I go over to Johnny and say, hey, Johnny, do me a favor. Can you lend me an axe? And you know what Johnny says? Johnny says, you know, I asked you for an axe yesterday. And did you lend it to me? No. So guess what? I'm not going to lend it to you either. That's how the sages understood what does it mean to bear a grudge. And that is, what, you hurt me yesterday? Now you're asking me for a favor? Sorry, I'm not exactly going to do it. Sorry, that's the way it goes. Too bad for you. And that's how they understood as what it means to violate. Lo tikom. Lo tikom, do not take vengeance. That's how it's understood. Don't take revenge. Just because you asked someone to borrow something, just because this person asked you yesterday to borrow something, and they said no. You asked them to borrow something, and they said no, and they come to you the following day, and you say no because, after all, they didn't help you out the day before. That is lo tikom. And what's the next one for lo titor? Lo titor is understood to mean it's almost like, you know, nursing a grudge, right? And what is that? What do I mean by that? You know what? You asked me yesterday to borrow something. Sorry, I asked you yesterday to borrow something. Now today you're asking me to borrow something. Well, guess what? I'm going to lend it to you. Do you know why? Because I'm better than you. That, my friends, is referred to as lo titor. So that's what it means to don't seek vengeance. You didn't lend it to me. I'm not going to lend it to you. And the second case of do not bear a grudge is, you know what I'm going to do? I am going to lend it to you because I'm better than you. Both of those examples are, in fact, understood to mean lo tikom velo titor, vengeance and bearing a grudge. And you're not allowed to do that. It's a prohibition. You're not allowed to. Well, what in the world is the connection? Why all of a sudden are we talking about bearing a grudge and revenge? What exactly is this idea here? Why are we talking about being vengeful and bearing a grudge right now in this verse? Well, my friends, we understand the connection to the previous pasuk, the previous verse it will make sense. Remember our person? Remember we had this person? We had this person who was holding on to hatred in their heart. They didn't approach the person. They didn't go over to that person and explain to them kindly. And that's what it means, right? How is it that you rebuke somebody? You go over to them and you say, I'm sorry. What happened? Why is it that you don't like me? Why is it that you did that to me? That's what it means to go over to somebody. But if you don't go over to them and you hold it inside, says the commentaries, you know what's going to happen? What you're feeling inside is going to manifest itself. How will it manifest itself? It will manifest itself by you holding a grudge, seeking vengeance upon somebody else. Because if you don't bring out into the open issues, if you try to bury issues deep inside, they will manifest themselves psychologically, emotionally, in other areas. And what are those areas? Seeking revenge and bearing a grudge. That is how is the connection between 18 and 17. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. But if and I think in the world that we live in, we know that when you don't deal with issues, when you try to sweep issues and challenges, and some people in community, right, they sweep issues under the carpet. What ends up happening is that they just fester. And at some point in time, the issues are going to explode. Maybe this is what's happening. This person is so upset at Johnny. And they see Johnny, and they're angry at Johnny. And like I said, I'll use the same joke twice. They've taken up your mind, and therefore, they're not even paying rent. And now they're taking over your heart. And so when Johnny comes over to you about borrowing an axe or borrowing a wheelbarrow, guess what? You say, I'm better than you. I'm not going to lend it to you. And you attack them. Because we know when there's something that's deep inside of you, eventually it's going to come out. And that's how it's understood by many of our commentators. And that is the connection between 17 and 18. 18 is saying that these issues will manifest, will percolate, will come to the surface at some point. And now, here we go. Vavta l'reacha kamocha. That phrase, which is quoted and cited all the time, it seems to be something which is almost impossible. But if you understand its phrase in its context, it makes so much sense. Why does the Torah tell us, Ve'afta l'reacha kamocha? The answer is, you should love your fellow Israelite as yourself. If someone was upset at you, wouldn't you want them to come over to you? Wouldn't you want them to approach you? Wouldn't you want them to say something to you? What, you want them to hate you forever? You want them to have all these explosive moments? Of course not. You want to have open communication and dialogue, because that, my friends, is the way to have healthy relationships with those people in our lives that matter, as opposed to trying to hide things, as opposed to trying to say everything is fine, everything is okay, when it's anything but. And that's the context of Avtarecha Kamocha. It's this grandiose idea. You know, you should love all your fellow Jews, all your fellow Jews, right? Your brothers like yourself? Wow. And as someone just said, and they're absolutely right, people tend to shy away from confrontations, which, by the way, is unfortunate. It is actually unfortunate, because when you confront people and have an open and honest dialogue, it is much, much healthier. Psychologically, emotionally, much healthier to do. And so this incredible, I think, insight gives us that context, right? And what's it saying? And I think this is important. Number one, what is the path to love your neighbor as yourself? Love your neighbor as yourself. It doesn't come out of nowhere. Because let's face it, sometimes bad things happen with people that you're even close with, family members or friends. And the Torah is giving us a recipe for love in the face of all this negativity. Step one, notis natricha bovavecha. You want to hate them? Maybe it's even saying, okay. But don't hate them in your heart. You have a problem? You know? I don't know. Hate away, right? Lay out carefully, constructively, in the best way that you can. What's bothering you? Think about what is really the dangers of holding hatred inside. If you're allowed to hate, maybe. I don't know. One thing you have to do is I have to tell you what's on my mind. And if I can truly go over to somebody and tell them, do you know why I'm angry at you? Do you know why I'm upset at you? Because of what you did, X and Y. And you know what? When you do that and you articulate those things, I bet you most of the time you realize, I shouldn't even hate you to begin with. I don't even have a case against you. When I articulate why I'm so angry, I realize that this is so silly. It's so petty. And then we can reconcile. Because I've demonstrated to you what is on my mind. And that person could then respond, oh my goodness, you totally misunderstood me. You can explain and there's room for healing. And when there's no misunderstanding, and when you really do something, you can have an opportunity to apologize. Johnny can apologize to you. You can apologize to Johnny. And I think that leads to true Vavta L'Re'acha Kamocha. But it all stems and it emanates. If you hate someone deep inside, it has tremendous potential for danger. And it's hard. But put your cards on the table. That's how hatred gets dissipated. And that's the way that you love your neighbor as yourself. Okay, I see someone made a comment. Whether you need to be self-critical, not just you might look at just right, for sure. Thank you, Gershon. Thank you. No question. I think there's some truth to it. Someone else wrote, love your failure is no way. Right. So it's actually a very interesting comment. It says, L'Re'acha Kamocha. How does this apply to someone who's not your Re'acha? That's an excellent question. And this was understood in many different ways. Some even say that it's your Re'acha, that it might only apply in certain situations to certain of the Jews that are like yourself. And in fact, someone asked the question, love your fellow Israelite, and what about your Christian and or Muslim neighbors? How is there no obligation? It's an excellent question, and it can be understood that there might not be an obligation to love them as yourself. We know when it comes to honor, when it comes to kavod habriyah, honor for all of humanity you have to do, and all human beings are created in the image of God. So yes, you would have, but maybe love to have this real sense of confrontation and open dialogue and discussion in that intense manner, maybe as what we explained, that there is not such an obligation, but respect for all of humanity, I think there would be. So, but an excellent question. Again, there are certain halachic Jewish law uses this phrase and has it apply in other situations. But I'm not going to get into the details of that at this moment. If you want, you can ask me later. You can ask Ray Cohen later. So I see that someone else put in the chat. Right. So Ben mentioned something. That putting these people out of your mind and concern is better than carrying a grudge. There's no question that's for sure true. The question is that realistic? We're only human. So the Torah only wants us to be human. The Torah doesn't demand on us to be superheroes. The Torah doesn't demand on us to be abnormal. The Torah wants us to be normal. I think that's at a Rosh Yeshiva, you used to say that a lot, that there are no shortcuts in life and there's a mitzvah to be normal. All mitzvah are done normally. Any mitzvah that looks like two, sometimes people eat matzah like in 10 seconds at the Seder. That's not so normal. Maybe that's not the way we're supposed to do it. But things have to be done. Again, I really like normal has quotations around it sometimes. But there's no, I think the way it's understood is that the Torah realizes that there's tension with human beings. You're not always going to lead a life where everyone around you in life, specifically your family members and your close friends, which I do think these verses are specifically highlighting because they are re'acha. You don't borrow and lend things to every person, right? So you're talking about people that you're engaging with on a regular basis, which, by the way, would explain why it might not apply to a Christian or Muslim or a non-Jew. I can't imagine too many times people were lending things, right, to the non-Jews around them throughout Jewish history. And I think that when you engage with these people, the Torah says, yes, sometimes there's going to be strife. Remember, the Torah is dealing with human life situations. It talks about divorce, and it talks about, you know, returning lost objects, and it talks about returning items that were stolen. You know, there's like a bad joke that said, you know, when a person who's getting older in age goes to the rabbi and says, Rabbi, please, there are certain commandments that I have not fulfilled yet. I want to fulfill all the commandments. And the rabbi says, heaven forbid, I don't want you to keep all the commandments, because you know why? There's a commandment to divorce your wife. Now, does that mean you should go out of your way to have a divorce to fill a commandment? Of course not. That's preposterous. It's silly. The Torah realizes human situations. Sometimes marriage doesn't work out. And there's another mitzvah. There's another commandment. One of the 613 is returning a stolen item. V'heshiv et hagzela asher lakach. No one would say, hey, Rabbi, let me go over to Johnny, steal his axe, so that I could fulfill the mitzvah to return it. The Torah realizes human life happens. Tension happens. Strife happens. And tension among people that we live among happen and occur. So yes, I think it is true that it's better to push it aside, not let have it bother you at all, and don't hold a grudge, and just let bygones be bygones. And maybe that's one of the differences, right? In the Christian world, if someone punches you, you have to turn your cheek and get punched back. I'm not sure if that's true in Judaism. I think in Judaism, someone punches you, you confront them, you talk to them. Is it better not to be affected by it? I guess there are certain, maybe quote unquote, saintly people who aren't impacted by others. They can do whatever they do to you, it doesn't bother you. That's not what the Torah is referring to. The Torah is referring to, I think, real life and real human beings. But thank you. That was a good point. I'm just going to scroll up. I think I might have missed something. Question. Okay. I think I'm okay. Okay, wonderful. I wanted to highlight me one more thing, because I still have a few more minutes. Right, Kelman, right? 9:30? 9:30, okay.
Yeah.
9:30, okay. We want to, you know, people to go to the end, which is good.
Baltigra.
I'm going to actually expand on
Baltigra.
Right. And that is, I actually want to go to the opening line of our Parsha this week. I think it has an amazing, amazing, profound message. What I'm going to do is I'm going to send it out also on the chat. There we go. You can either read it or just follow along and listen. It doesn't really matter. Her opening pasuk, well, second pasuk in this parsha, it's a double header this week, is Kedoshim. And here's a fascinating line. I'll tell you why. It's fascinating. The Birko Dapin Israel, speak to the entire Israel community and say to them, Bamartalehem, Kedoshim to you. You shall be holy, for I, your God, Hashem, am holy. Now, this pasuk we could talk about for hours and hours. A lot of ink has been spilled trying to understand what in the world this verse means. We live in a secular world, and has been influenced by the Christian world and the secular world. And the problem also is that we use words sometimes that are not necessarily authentically Jewish. One word that we sometimes use is the word holy. Now, kedoshim, kadosh, kadosh, kadosh. You'll often see holy, holy, holy. It's not a great translation, because I don't know about you, but I have no idea what the word holy means. Holy is I don't know what that means. Christians say their cross is holy, there are holy places, holy people, but it's not really an authentically Jewish word. The real authenticity, the real authentic word is kadosh. And I don't think it really means holy as sometimes we see and perceive it to be holy. What this parsha, which is Parsha Kedoshim, tells us an outline. How do you become holy? Now, this is important because when we stood at the foot of Sinai, in chapter 19, I believe, in Shemot, in Exodus, there, right before we received the Decalogue, before the Sereta Dibrot, there is a very powerful statement that God is telling the people that he's chosen us to become a mamlachet kohanim, a kingdom of priests, v'goy kadosh. And here's that word again, a holy nation. It is in our parsha where it tells you, how do you become that goy kadosh? What's the recipe? What do you need to do? It's not just this lofty idea of holy, whatever holiness is. No, it requires concrete actions, behaviors, some of which we've actually spelt out over the last, 45 minutes. But this is how we become holy, kadoshim tihiyu. Now, there's a tremendous debate between, the Ramban and Rashi over what mitzvah is it referring to? But at the end of the day, I think the message here is ki kadosh ani ashel gechem. Hashem is holy. What does it mean to be holy? What does it mean to be holy? Now, sometimes the best way to define a word is to see the word in context that we understand and grasp a little bit better. Let's use Shabbat as a great example. Because the Torah, right back in the beginning of Genesis in Bereshit, says that what does Hashem do? Vayikadeshoto. God makes Shabbat holy. What does it mean? Friday night, many of us pick up a glass. I don't have wine or grape juice. I have a bubbly. I like bubbly a lot, right? I'm not drinking wine or grape juice at 9:15 on a Thursday night. Sorry. Maybe sometimes, but not usually. And we take this glass of wine or grape juice and we recite what's referred to as Kiddush. What does it mean? What are we doing? What are we saying? We're just reading particular. Baruch Adam, it concludes with Mekadesh Shabbat. Mekadesh Shabbat, the sanctification of Shabbat. Well, what does it mean? And sometimes in synagogue, we do something and we recite it called Kaddish. When we recite Kaddish at various places during the service, sometimes it has a very technical function. Sometimes it's recited over a loved one. But there's this something called Kaddish. Well, what's Kaddish? But it's the same root word. Under the chuppah, a man gives a woman a ring, and that's referred to as Kiddushin. What are we doing over there? Betrothal. How all these root words are using the same letters. Kuf, Dalid, Shin. Kadosh, Kodesh, Kadoshim Tihiyu. Well, what do they all mean? What do they have in common? What is their function? So I think when we talk about what does the word holiness mean? Oh, one more. Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Hashem, God is holy. What does it mean? There's Kedusha. Well, what does it mean? Here's what I want to leave you with. How are we supposed to become a holy people? Number one, the Kedusha, sanctification, holiness, doesn't come automatically. It requires effort. It requires purpose. It requires intent, preparation. The best example that I can give you is Shabbat. If you don't prepare for Shabbat, your Shabbat is going to be miserable. You're not going to eat anything. It's going to be pretty lousy. It's going to be pretty annoying. You prepare for Shabbat, it will be beautiful. In fact, the Onkelos, a commentator who offers a commentary actually in Aramaic on the Torah, translates the word Vikidashta etahar. We needed to sanctify the Mount Sinai. He actually translated the word Vikidashta with the word, and you will prepare. So for Onkelos, he also understands Kedusha requires preparation. And it does, requires preparation. If you think that you're going to make things holy without preparation, you're in for something. When we talk about the Shabbat, what is in that Shabbat is Kadosh? I think it's trying to say that Shabbat is unique and distinct from the other days of the week. There are 7 days of the week. Kedusha, Kadosh, Shabbat is holy. It's separate, unique, and distinct from the other days of the week. But just because it's separate, unique, and distinct from the other days of the week, still requires, you have to do something. It requires an effort. So when we recite Kiddush Friday night, we make a declaration, a statement. We say that Shabbat is separate, unique, and distinct from the other days of the week. But it requires me to do something. It requires me to perform actions, have a certain attitude, have a certain sense of preparation. That's what Kedusha really is. So it's not something about this, we talk about, what is it that God is Kadosh? This is an important idea. That God is also, God is not part of this world. what do we say it? What's referred to as kedusha? Kadosh kadashem tzva melocho la'aretz kevado. God is separate. He's part of this world, but he's not part of this world, right? His glory is part of this world, but he is not part of this world. He's also separate, unique, and distinct from the world that we live in. When a man gives a woman a ring under the chuppah, which is referred to as kedushin, right? There's, I don't know, billions of women in the world, but that woman who's next to me is separate, unique, and distinct from everyone else. But that requires not, that's just step one. It requires then an action, a demonstration to prove it, to highlight it, to ensure that I'm recognizing it, that kedusha, that sanctity in that person. And so I think that maybe is the beginning, and there's so much more to develop when we talk about kedusha and holiness. But to me, what highlights the opening of our parsha, of the second parsha of Kedoshim, and it says that, you know what? Everyone is able to do it. It's not through the esoteric or quote unquote just spiritual matters. We talk about kedusha. How do we become a mamlachet kodim and goy kadosh? Here's the recipe. This is what you do. Look at the next line. Ish imo vaviv tirau. Fear your mother and your father. Keep my Shabbat. Ani Hashem Elokechem. It says in verse 3. Meaning the Torah is spelling out to us, what can we do? There's a concrete recipe. It doesn't mean we should divorce our and live on some hilltop somewhere and not be connected to our parents. Not at all. In fact, Shabbat. Talk about the holiness of Shabbat. You know, maybe you don't need to have like your 8 different types of schmaltz herrings and your 17 types of meats. Although, right? But Shabbat is very much physical. There's a very much a physical element to Shabbat. But recognizing that, yes, there's this physical nature, but I'm not defined by this physical nature. I realize that there's something greater. There's this holiness. There's this kedusha that we have to recognize what we can do in this world as a sense of mission and a sense of purpose. I think that also is trying to tell us this basic ingredient of what kedusha, what sanctity really is in the world that we live in. That it's part of the world. We can engage in this world. And through doing those things, that is how we can lead this life of kedusha, of sanctity, and of holiness, how it's understood in the Torah, which is very practical and concrete. And there's that the recipe, as I was saying before. If we continue, I want to show you one more in a few more minutes. I don't see any other questions. In verse 9, right? If you scroll down in verse 9, it then tells us how we engage with our fields. And what's amazing here, verse 9, verse 10. And remember, this is the recipe of Kedusha. Well, you know what else is telling us? When you go and harvest your land. Go and harvest my land. That's mundane. That's physical. No, says the Torah. How is it possible? This is the recipe of Kedusha. You'd think this is not Kedusha. This is not holiness. Holiness is like, you know, for saints. Holiness is like for priests. No, says the Torah. Do you know what you do? It's engaging once again in this physical world. When you harvest your land, you got to eat. When you do it, what's the mindset? Leave the corners. Leave things that fall. Don't try to take every grain of wheat and every bit of grapes and produce for yourself. But a couple ones that fall, a couple... leave for somebody else. Leave for those people, as it says in verse 10, La nivela gerta zomata. Leave them for the poor. Leave them for the stranger. Don't take every last bit. And once again, we see this theme of that kedusha is all about using the physical world and not being shackled by it, not using it to totally force you how to have this attitude, but rather I can use these, even when I'm doing my physical things, it's the state of mind. It's how I'm viewing the world around me and how I engage with it that is enhancing my everyday life. And so I wanted to show you a few examples, in the Torah of the recipe of Kedoshim Tihyu. And of course, if I continue to scroll down, not just that, but even people who have jobs, even workers. I scroll down to verse 13. Don't defraud your fellow. Don't commit robbery. The wages of your laborer should not remain with you until the morning. Lo tasok et re'acha v'lo tigzor lo talin pulat sachir itcha ad bokir. Even rules that have to do with money, right? Don't defraud your fellow. Don't commit robbery. Pay your workers on time. By the way, it's actually interesting. What does it mean they have to refrain until the morning? Does that mean that if you hire people, you have to pay them every single day, right? You know, person works for you. Well, in Canada, you get paid, I don't know, once a week, once a month, twice a month. Well, is that a violation of the Torah? It's actually not. When it comes to most monetary law, it's actually governed sometimes by the law of the land, what's considered a regular expectation. So since the expectation is that you don't get paid every single day, maybe there are certain places that pay you every day. I've yet to work at a place where I get paid every single day. It's not very efficient. That would be considered okay. But the idea here, once again, is highlighting that these are very mundane matters. They're not grandiose. They're not talking about, you know, phylacteries or tefillin or quote unquote spiritual matters. They're talking about everyday activities, everyday, regular, normal interactions. The recipe of what it means to attain Kedusha is defined in the Torah over and over and over again. So if we recognize that people are unique, we realize that, of course, Shabbat, God, or interactions, our daily interactions, are unique and distinct and can be instilled with meaning and purpose. That is how we lead this life of Kedusha. It's something which, of course, we strive for and try to attain on a regular basis. As challenging it may be, it is not talking about being a superhuman. It recognizes challenges, and it just tries to give us a recipe and a mindset how to deal with it. Yeah, so I just wanted to highlight a few other examples. And then, of course, our example that we mentioned is listed there as well. And then finally, I'll give you one more example. I'm in verse 19. Et chukotai tishmoru, you observe my laws. Bemtacha lo tarbia kilayim, satcha lo tizra kilayim, ubege kilayim shanez lo yala alacha. Observe my laws. Now, there's a, it's interesting. Without getting into, with only 5 minutes to go, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. But what exactly is a chok and what exactly is a mishpat is fascinating. Regardless, these types of laws that are mentioned here, we have to observe, the Torah tells us. And what is this area? The area of lo tarbiya kilayim. Specifically, there's different types of things that we might mix. We might want to mix, there's different types of wool and linen that we mix. That's referred to as shatnez. That's listed in that pasuk. We're also not allowed to mix certain types of species when you grow them. And at the same time, certain animals, if you're not allowed to have them work together, there could be the sense of conflict. Because also, no matter how much creativity we're allowed to have in the world that we live in, we also need to recognize that sometimes it's not beneficial to mix certain things. Okay, why them and why these? It's perhaps for another time. But I even wanted to highlight that even the agricultural world, even the world of animals, not just with human interactions, and not just with Shabbat, but also how we look at the produce of the world that we live in, the animals that we're using in our fields, all of this is also part of our Kedoshim mindset. And therefore, if that is the framework that we are using, the recipe that we have, to hopefully truly attain this beautiful world that we live in, to strive and to try to yearn to become a mamlachet konim and a goy kadosh, as outlined in our parsha. And often human interactions, I believe personally, are the most difficult. I think sometimes it's easier to deal with animals, easier to deal with plants, easier to deal. But with humans, it's the most challenging. And that's why the Torah tells us, not in a vacuum, but in the context, in the broader context of Kedushim Tihyu, something which, like I've said a few times already, is a very noble, powerful statement that I think enriches our lives and the lives of everyone around us.
Thank you. That's, of course, a lot easier to interact with God also than with man. It's very easy to be from, you know, because that's, you know, animal. But anyways, if I can add that. Thank you, Rabbi Greenberg. Okay, Yasher Koach. Okay.
Next week,
Rabbi Shaul Robinson from Lincoln Square Synagogue will be giving the Parsha Shir. Tomorrow morning, of course, I'll be continuing our weekly Shir on the Siddur. We're now in the second. We'll start the second bracha, hopefully, of Ava Rabbah as we finish Yotzer HaMorod, as we're going through Birkat Kriyat Shema. And if you didn't see the email I sent out earlier today, I'm quite excited to announce the Dovrei Ivrit, Rav Yoel Binun Yavir Shi'ur Arba Shirim Bivrit, who Yatkil Biyom Rishon B'teisha V'chetzi B'boker, Lifnei Shir Shel HaRav Liptag. So Rabbi Yoel Binun is really one of the foremost experts in Tanakh, one of the founders of Yeshivat Har Etzion, really one of the architects of the whole new study of Tanakh in Israel. And of course, also the first person, I think, in Dreamers. He was one of the paratroopers who captured the Kotel. We'll be giving a four-part series. He really, unlike, let's say, Rev Bazak, he doesn't speak English. Like, Rev Bazak gave the shiur in Hebrew, but he knows English. You say, Rev Yoel Binun, I think his English is not good at all. But anyway, so please, God, that's 9:30. It'll be four Sundays. We'll be missing one or two. They're not going to be exactly in a row, but the next 2 weeks. So you can register for that. We'll also, next week, Kamari Election will be starting in a new series. Yosef Lindell will be starting a new series on Monday. I just sent out an email with all the new classes. I think we have, I don't know, 11, 12 classes during the week. So we look forward to learning with you. And I know you're going to come, but please invite a friend to come and join us. So look forward to all that. Okay. But Baruch Hashem, Rabbi, as you said at the beginning, Baruch Hashem, people still come to learn. 30, I knew it was going to get bigger. We got up to 48 people. What do you mean 29 people? That was just, that was in the warm-ups. Then once you get going, you know, so.
I wonder if it's maybe some of the people who are not from Toronto. That also helps.
Yeah, well, they're always, today, Torah is the, you know, call it Torah, the whole world. This is, we're not longer Toronto. Toronto is just a little place on the map that probably some people here have never been to.
Right.
So
Faratza,
anyway.
Should be
Faratza. Yama v'Kedmat Safona v'Nekba. But okay, everybody. Okay, Lila Tov. I don't know if we mentioned earlier. I have no idea what the score is in the Leaf game, but can check later for those who are interested in such unholy activities. Although I guess you can. Okay, we won't go there. But very.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everyone. Nice to see you. If any questions, if you have any questions to me specifically, you can always send me an email if you Google my name. But I'll give you the easiest email is rabbiaarongreenberg@gmail.com. Any questions, comments, happy to do a follow-up. And thank you for the opportunity. Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Shabbat shalom. Okay, Lila Tov, Shabbat shalom, everybody. Hope to see you soon. Thank you very much. Okay.